Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs. Plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome. This is your host, Ken D. Foster, and I'm glad you're here today. We're going to be talking about a subject that we will all experience in our life. We're going to talk about the courage to face death. Yeah, death, like physical death. Wow. Okay, this is going to be really good. So I want to ask you a couple of questions. You know, when I even mentioned the word death, does that bring up ideas for you? Do you think about death as kind of morbid, or do you think a death is painful, or do you think a death is the end of life, the end of existence as we know it? Maybe there's some misconceptions that you may have. Maybe you would like to experience what we're all going to go through in a more joyful, more happy, more understanding, more wisdom, more courage, more courageous way. Maybe, just saying, you know, we're all going to go through it. And in my beliefs, death doesn't end, but the physical belief, with the physical death, it goes on. We're eternal beings. We're a soul that has, we're really, I would say in my world, you're an eternal being having a physical experience, right? And, you know, when this physical experience ends, you go on to the next experience. It's been my understanding. I've studied NDAs for many, many years in many different religious and spiritual studies. And that's my conclusion, right? NDAs, near-death experience, right? In fact, we have, at one point I looked at the statistics, and I think it was like 10,000 near-death experiences every month, something like that, that in the United States alone that people are going through. So I don't never want to go through an NDA myself. I've already learned what's on the other side. I don't need to do that for obvious reasons. You know, a lot of times the people are they've hurt themselves or they've taken themselves to places that you don't want to be. But here's the good news. We're going to explore on this show everything from psychedelics, how they can help you to understand the near-death, the death experience. We're going to explore a book that is going to give you all the topics, everything you need to understand about the death experience. I've got an expert in my show today who is, I'll introduce him in a second. He's really been in this area for many decades and has a lot of expertise. So I think we're going to answer a lot of your questions around death and dying and how we can experience it in a way that really supports our development, our growth, our evolution, ourselves. So that's what we're going to do. I'll be right back. I'm going to take a break, and then I'm going to have my guest. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back to the show, everyone. This is your host, Kendi Foster. My very special guest is Dr. Brad Stewart. Brad, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Thank you very much, Ken. It's great to be here.
And I'd like to give you a little formal introduction to those that may not be familiar with you. Dr. Brad Stewart is an MD. He's practiced general internal medicine, treating patients in his office, the emergency room, and the hospital and the ICU. The latter half of his career was devoted to caring of the dying. He first served as hospice medical director in 1993 and later became chief medical director for hospice services at the largest nonprofit healthcare system in Northern California. Dr. Stewart has written over 50 peer-reviewed papers and book chapters. He has given hundreds of talks internationally on clinical, emotional, and spiritual issues faced by people who are seriously ill and their loved ones. I'm so glad you did all that research. You know, I'd really like to find out, you know, from you, about my audience would too. What did all that research lead to? What conclusions? I'll just start there.
Well, a lot of that introductory material you just presented led up to actually helping to change the healthcare system from the inside. We developed a way of caring for people at home when they were seriously ill. We worked with Medicare to develop payment for it and all that, the system change stuff. But I think what we want to talk about today is, something deeper and more personal, something that has been important to me ever since I went to medical school back in the 70s. And that is, people who are facing really serious illness and the ones who are courageous enough, speaking of the theme of your show, courageous enough to face the fact that their life is going to end, which we all probably ought to face whether we're sick or not. There's a way to do that with courage and armed with knowledge that science is now giving us about what the end of life is really about and what may happen beyond the point that we die. So I really think today's show ought to be about good news, even though I don't want to downplay the grief and all the challenges that people face. When they face death, it's a forbidding subject, but I think we have some good news to talk about.
That's good. Well, you touched on a subject that when my mother was passing away, she had a really great hospice nurse. He was a guy, and he said to me, "Your mother is facing death courageously. She knows she's dying." And I said, "Well, why'd you say that?" And he says, "Well, because most people that I work with are in denial of their own death. They do not believe that they're going to die, and they hang on to, false hope." Has that been your experience?
Absolutely. I think we are so good medically now at postponing death. We can't prevent it, but boy, can we keep people going, sometimes for longer periods than they themselves would like. All you got to do is go into an ICU near you, if you can get in there, and look at who's there, and see some of the old people on ventilators who will probably never leave. They're there for long periods of time. I think we as physicians and as a healthcare system and people ourselves and our loved ones all want to stay alive as long as we can. I think that's natural. But your mom, if she was able to really face the fact that the end was coming, that probably helped her to be able to really deal with the fact that the end of her life was coming. And that's so important to do, to be conscious about who we are as we approach the end of our lives. You can't do that if you're in denial, and many, many people are, and their families often are, even when they aren't. So it's very important to to talk about that?
Well, I think it's really important because if someone's in denial and let's say, you know, on a financial level, they haven't set up their trust, or maybe they set up the trust, they never funded it. They haven't had talks with their children that, you know, they want things that they may want to say or the children want to say to them. From that point of view, I mean, and we can go on and on. There's a lot of reasons why not being in denial is a really good thing. Not to mention the cost there are probably other people on ventilators and what have you that cost to insurance companies, cost to society, cost to their families, that all this because they decided they weren't going to die, right? They didn't believe that this physical body leaves or ends.
Yeah, and I think it's true. And in all fairness, the way we live and the way we die has changed a lot just in the last 20 years. People live much longer, healthier lives, healthy and functional, closer and closer to the end than we used to. Back in the 80s, when I saw a person in my office who was in their 70s, they looked and felt old. Now you have people in their mid-80s playing tennis, and many of those folks, may play tennis until the week before they die. So it's not easy often to know when the end of your life is coming. That's why I think, it's good to do a little homework and preparation so you're ready when the time actually comes.
Well, I'm kind of a funky guy. I've even written my memorial service for my daughters, right? So that they would have things to say and, prepared, right? Prepared, financially, prepared in all areas. Well, I've been a coach for 30 years, been teaching other people to do that. But there's so much we can do to prepare. And you said something that I think is interesting. Now I want to get to your book. You said that dying has changed, right? And when you said that, I like to explore that. Like, what's the difference of how, in other than you might live longer and pass the next week, but, playing tennis, but what other things have changed around the dying process?
Well, this is the big paradox, I think, around end of life care these days is, science and technology has advanced so fast that, now we can really not just keep people alive longer, but as you mentioned, there are more and more people who are in ICUs or in hospitals who suffer cardiac arrest and actually die, but they're brought back. So where near-death experiences used to be very interesting, very unusual, and very noteworthy, now they're really common. And I was with a guy yesterday that I had just met. We were at the gym together, and I told him what I've done for work. And he said, well, I had a heart attack a while back. And, what I experienced before they brought me back was I was in this place that was just full of love. And I said, I won't say his name, but I said, you just put your finger on the biggest theme, the biggest thing that people talk about when we bring them back from beyond death, from the other side. They talk about a place that's made of love. And I, as a scientist and a skeptic for years, I used to listen to that and think it was kind of woo-woo until I experienced more and more heard more and more, read scientific papers showing data about more and more people who have experienced death and have been brought back by our technology. And it's not what you would think unless you've actually been there or unless you've experienced psychedelics, and there are some remarkable parallels between the psychedelic experience and the near-death experience as measured using scientific instruments.
Interesting. Well, I just looked it up, and According to a Gallup poll, we have about 774 near-death experiences occur daily in the United States. So as you mentioned, you know, there's a lot of science around this now. So it's what I love about talking about this is that bringing it to people's awareness, you know, you can do your own research on the NDA side of that, which will help you prepare. But there's even a quicker way to do it, in my estimate, and that is to go out and get Dr. Stewart's book. It's called Facing Death: Spiritually, Science, and Surrender at the End of Life. Wow. Spirituality, Science, and Surrender at the End of Life. Okay. Let's talk about this. Now, I do have to take a quick break. So when we get back, I want to take a deep dive into your new book and how people can maybe quicken their understanding of death and the process and what they can look forward to. So we'll be right back. And we'll be talking about that.
The station that makes you feel good.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Well, welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Ken D. Foster. We are calling this show The Courage to Face Death. I have a very special guest. His name is Dr. Brad Stewart, and he is an expert in death and dying. And he's got a new book out there. It's called Facing Death: Spirituality, Science, and Surrender at the End of Life. Why'd you write the book?
Honestly, the reason I wrote this book, I wanted to write a book back when I first went into medicine. I had experiences in medical school in my third year that convinced me we do not know what we're doing when we're treating people who are seriously ill. And that eventually steered me toward end-of-life care. But it took me 50 years to write this book. And the reason I wrote it was I wanted to understand deep within myself what it was about the end of life that attracted me to devote all my time and energy to it. It's not something that appeals to everybody. And I didn't think I was the kind of person that it would appeal to. So I wrote the book to come to understand why it's important to know more about the end of life, and especially to know more about who we really are. And that's where we get into the spirituality aspect of it. I never considered myself super spiritual. I was never religious. But in the writing of the book, excuse me, one thing writing a book will do is it gets you deeply into really thinking through who you are and why it is that you're engaged in what you're doing. And that's where the book came from. And you know, I surprised myself in many of the chapters as I wrote it, because things came through that that I hadn't really thought much about before. And I realized as I was writing them, they're true. And it's an interesting way to come to know what you really believe is to write a book.
Yeah, I know I'm an author myself. I know that books write us. We don't necessarily write books. They come through us and we learn and we grow and we can now articulate on subjects that we've given deep thought to and bring forth that wisdom of the ages that we sometimes don't even know we had in us. So I'm sure a lot of that might have happened for you. I like that piece that you just mentioned about identity, you know, and about, you know, what'd you learn? I mean, what'd you learn about who we are, or who you are at the
spiritual level?
Yeah, that's the thing that I think I really wanted to understand is that when you accompany a large number of people all the way through the end of their lives, all the way through their illness, and all the way to the point when they die, and maybe you'll stay around a little bit after they die and feel through what's actually happening, you get to watch what it's really like to let go, to really let go. People at the end of lives let go of everything. And at the very end, not many people get to see this unless you're with a loved one when they die, maybe. But you'll let go of everything down to and including your own self, who you think you are. That you let go of that too. And what's the only thing that's left is your own essential, elemental, who you actually are. And looking at the data we now are getting, like you said, hundreds of times a day, we're getting more and more data from people who go through the portal of death and are brought back. And they know by experience what it's like to pass through letting go of everything and then to come back with the knowledge that they get on the other side. And that knowledge comes through who you actually are. So my feeling about it now is you can wait and not prepare and let the dying process take you down to who you really are. Or you can do a little preparatory work ahead of time and discover who you really are before dying does it for you. And I think in a way it's possible to actually prepare.
Yeah. Well, I think in this way that, you know, some people have a really difficult time letting go of a pen. Okay, or a pencil, go look at your garage. You know, I've traveled a lot in the United States, man. And we have a clutter problem in this country. We hold on to everything. We think that this is it. Be all the more stuff you have, the more happier you are. Of course, for most people, they finally understand that that's not necessarily true, and it's just as hard to buy something as to get rid of it. If that makes any sense. So this letting go process is a big piece, and where, you know, maybe share some practical steps or insights from your book, you know, to maybe help people to discover how to, you know their core and how to let go and how to prepare now. What do you say to that?
Well, what I would recommend is there are three things I touch on in the third part of my book. The first part of the book really is just stories about what I went through with people who were my patients. And I sometimes don't like calling them patients because the people we're face to face with who are suffering are people. And so are we as physicians. And so it's a face to face process. So the first part of the book talks about how I learned, and a lot of it was by making mistakes. You just have to try things and see what works. Then the second part of the book, I talk about what I've come to realize as to who we actually are. You know, you may believe that you are yourself. You may know yourself really well. You may have, like I have, you may have gone through 20 years of therapy and know your feelings. You know how your mind works. You know your habits. You know the ways that you treat people that may or may not be helpful, and you learn to do better. You may learn and know all those things, all those behaviors, but that may not go down deeply to your essence. The in the book, I call it the I am. It's that place that's empty. And, so in the third part of the book, I talk about meditation, psychedelics, and the near-death experience. And I went ahead and put references in there, scientific publications that really, if you want to get into depth on some of these things, you can follow the links and really read up on some of the research. But I think meditation is one good way to find who you really are. There are many ways to do it. This is not a show about meditation, so I won't go into great detail. But okay, you can find who you are underneath who you think you are, the self that you think you are. And once you're there in that place that's really you, you may laugh at yourself. You may be able to learn to love yourself, but yourself is not who you are. That's all the stuff you're going to let go of. So learning early might be a good thing to do.
Well, your words are very wise and very timely in this time of identity crisis in the world, especially in America, where we think we are our cars, our houses, our bodies, our minds, our emotions. We think we're all these things. And what Dr. Brad is saying is that that's kind of all an illusion, based on the science and based on the research. So when we get back from the break, what I'd like to do is take maybe you can provide some examples of what the mystics and the visionaries have conveyed for thousands of years that can resonate, with our readers today. So I want you to take a dive into that. We got to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
The station that makes you feel good.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Ken D. Foster. And yeah, I'm so blessed to be able to do these shows. Don't you feel that you're learning, you're growing, you're evolving as you watch these shows? I bet you're saying yes. If you're a first-time guest, I hope you will go and subscribe to our YouTube channel so that you don't miss any of the shows. And by the way, I believe life is chiefly service. And one of the ways we can be of service to one another is by sharing this show with somebody that may be going through the near-death process or the death experience right now. Somebody you may know, or maybe you passed on a friend that you really like them to know this information. That's how the show grows. That's how we grow our audience and we upshift consciousness around the world. So I hope you'll take us up on that and go do that. All right, Dr. Brad, in your I like to put that book up on the screen again because it's such a cool cover. And you know, if you're facing death, I have a listening audience out there. Brad Stewart, MD, Facing Death. Brad Stewart, MD. That's you can get this at Amazon or anywhere that books are sold. So I hope you'll check it out. All right, what are the mystics saying that's in this book that we can learn practically that apply to our lives? The visionaries.
Well, I think number one is we all believe we're individuals, especially in our United States culture, and we are. You can't function in society and be successful unless you have a well-developed ego and you're an individual who knows who you are and knows how to function. You can't be a doctor and be any good at what you do unless you know how to cure illnesses that are curable. But you can't be a great physician unless you also know how to heal, not just how to cure, how to heal, and they're different. I think what decided me to go into end-of-life care after years of, I have to say, saving many, many lives, was that I realized that curing is not, it's not that it's not vital. It's critical to if you have a terrible illness, to be cured and have more life left to live is a tremendous gift. But when you can't be cured, and when you're a physician who knows that you can't cure the illness that you're patient has, whether it be cancer or any number of other illnesses, you have to know how to sit with that person, let go of all your own baggage, and let go of yourself, ask the right questions, be really open, and listen to what the other person has to say. And if you ask the right questions, and I have a chapter in my book where I tell the story of doing this with a patient I just met in the emergency room in his 30s, who I discovered on his chest x-ray that he had cancer. We talked through it right there in the ER. And it's that kind of healing process helps us realize that we're not separate at all. We are all connected. And I think mystics have been telling us that forever. I'm not particularly Christian, but I have read the Bible, especially the New Testament, because I wanted to see what Jesus actually had to say. And it's all about that fact that our mission here is to learn how to let go of our own prejudices and our own biases and leave our baggage at the door and learn to love others and give of who we are so we can hear where the other person is coming from. And I think these days, when the other side of the coin is being practiced all over, I think that's really important to remember. That's just one aspect of what we've been hearing from mystics for as long as people have had language. There's lots of other things as well. We can get into psychedelics if you want and what I think they have to teach. We can get into brain imaging studies and what kind of questions they bring up about who are we? Who's really aware? What is consciousness? You know, what does the brain have to do with being conscious? You know, there's a lot of things we can approach here. I'll leave it up to you.
Well, you know, one of the things that I know about healing is that healing is always a quest. Okay, so normally, I don't know about normal. What my experience has been is that if you want to actually heal, okay, maybe not cure something temporarily so it pops up somewhere else in your body, you really need to address the mental, the emotional, the physical, and the spiritual aspect of all of it, right? As I believe is, you know, and I've read the Christian Bible too, and Jesus healed, right? And, you know, Jesus healed in, you know, and he was, you know, basically showing us the way, okay? And if you're a patient or you're somebody with disease right now, or you're somebody that's a doctor, I think curiosity is really where you need to be. You know, curious about, well, okay, Ken's saying, you know, mental, emotional, physical, spiritual. Okay, you got the doctor, you got the physical side, but there's the metaphysical side of the healing. And there's, you know, there's a mental, emotional side of the healing. And all of this is interconnected. All of it's interconnected. So I think as we get on the quest to really heal, okay, then we grow, we learn, we evolve. We step into, you know, whether you're a doctor and you go, well, you know, I haven't been able to heal this type of disease. I've just cured it. What do I need to learn? What do I need? Where do I need to grow? Where do I need to expand my consciousness so that I can really help my patients in a greater way? And the same thing with a patient. I think it's like, well, you know, you got to take care of you got to take full responsibility and be an advocate for your own healing and not put it off on the doctor. It's all up to him. You got to go, wait, I've got to tune into this. So that's kind of where I wanted to go with it. And I do want to bring the psychedelic piece in because I think it expands consciousness and expands awareness and opens up curiosity. So I'd like to just get your hit on what I just said.
Well, you said a lot there, Ken. I mean, I think about psychedelics, many of us, I'm 75 years old. I mean, many of us experienced psychedelics back in the days when LSD was first discovered, although psilocybin and others have been around for thousands of years and been used by mystics. And I'm sure used as party drugs for, you know, as long as we've been on this earth. But I think what's important to take seriously about the psychedelic experience is that, and I think this is what scientific studies of psychedelic therapy are showing, is just to throw some numbers around, people with terminal cancer who know that they are dying and who have been able to get beyond their denial and know that they're facing death, about 40% of those people have really disabling, debilitating fear, terror, horror, the emotional reaction comes from knowing that you're going to die. And I have a chapter in my book devoted to my own situation when I was diagnosed with cancer. I never expected to have the emotional reaction that I did when I was diagnosed. I thought I had the death thing wired. And that the point to that is nobody knows. You do not know how you're going to react when you're told that you're going to die. You just don't have any way of knowing, because you may have coped with it intellectually. You may think you've got your feelings all worked out. Believe me, you won't know till you get there. Now, what I think psychedelics and psychedelic therapy are showing us is that with the proper dose of, say, psilocybin, because most of the studies are done with psilocybin, with the proper dose of psilocybin, the proper setting, and the proper guidance, someone who has some training, you may or may not want to do this all on your own. I'm not going to recommend it one way or the other. I do think it's a really good idea to find a center that knows how to handle what comes up.
Yeah.
Of those 40% of people who are terror-stricken, about 75% of them, after the experience is over and when they're surveyed and we have instruments, multi-item questionnaires that go over what you learned, and they're administered for months after the experience, not just the day of, what we find is like 75% or so of people lose their fear of death through that experience. The other 25, most of them are a lot less afraid. There are very, very few people that have bad trips under the right guide. So we can talk about what people discover when they're there. So,
what's the primary fear of death? What is that?
I think the fear of death is wired into us. It's natural. It comes from your body. It comes from the part of your mind and your emotions that you're born with. It's not actually what I consider. It's not actually you. It's your genetic programming and what you've learned, in your life to fear. All that comes to a head, and getting through that fear and out the other side of it, I think, is what the healing process is about.
Okay. Yeah, because it seems the fear of death is kind of a general catch-all, but, there's individual fears, fear of, fear of pain, right? Going through a pain process, fear of losing your loved ones, fear of, losing your mind, fear of, there's a lot of different fears. So
being a burden, there's lots of things to be afraid of. No question.
Yeah. And what the psychedelic journey is helping people to understand is what would you say, why do they transcend their fear?
Well, I think there's a couple of major aspects to it. It's way more complex than this, but the two things I think are important are, number one, under the influence of psilocybin or LSD, you're capable of looking at situations and questions in a much more impartial way than you are when you're sitting around in your day-to-day feelings. With the right guidance, you can sometimes really look at your fears and really see where they come from. That's very hard to do when you're sitting with them and immersed in them. Then the second thing I think is very important is the mystical experience itself, that on a sufficient dose of psilocybin or, say, LSD, you go through an experience of losing yourself. You drop yourself. And what you experience on the other side of that is different for everybody. But I think it's what it shows people is very similar to what people experience when they go through the dying process and come back in a near-death experience. They see how the universe is really constructed, how it's made, what it's built from. And people report almost universally that that experience is more real than what we think of as real life. Everyone says that. And it's to the point where you have to kind of believe that there may be another level of experience that you have access to in certain ways that is just as real as what we think is real here. And where I think is super interesting here is science is based on the assumption that if you can't measure it and see it, with your senses and apprehend it here, it's not real. And I think that's an assumption that science is going to have to examine, because its own data from psychedelic studies and near-death experiences contradict that assumption. There is more to existence than what we can see and feel here. So I think that'll be interesting to see how that sorts out.
Well, I'm really glad you brought that up. I think, science is evidence-based. And so, if you have the evidence showing that this reality is a shadow, or this reality is a dream of a dream, and there's something greater than this reality, I think we have to pay attention to the evidence, wherever the evidence leads us.
You would hope. And I think I see that happening if you follow the scientific literature. I think investigators who are doing research on the nature of human consciousness are really starting to ask questions about what it's really about. Does the brain manufacture consciousness? Science assumes that it does. that's tough to continue to buy that when you see someone who, say, has been prepared for surgery. I have a story in my book in detail about a woman who, in order to fix an aneurysm at the base of her brain, and if she hadn't had surgery, it would have eventually ruptured and killed her. She was young. They had to stop her heart, tip her up, drain her blood in order to get back there and fix that problem with her artery. And while they were monitoring her brain function stopped completely. And she had an incredible experience while all that was going on that had nothing to do with the activity of her brain. It was something else that she experienced. What was that? I don't think we can explain it, because all this explanation stuff we're doing here is all inside this world. Up on my wall, I've got a little saying that I watch all the time. Every description of this world is from inside it. I don't think we can understand what's beyond death if we insist on understanding it from this point of view that we have here. You have to experience it. That's why meditation, where you can get toward experiencing it, and psychedelics, where I think you probably can experience it, are two ways to begin to prepare for that. Just thinking about it and trying to explain it, even with science is going to have to grow in order to do that, because this brain is not competent to understand it. And yet, this brain can receive it, and we can experience it. There's a difference.
Well, this is a fascinating subject, and we're going to have to, invite you back on, because we could go a lot of different directions with this. And it's been fascinating conversation. And we're kind of neophytes in the area of consciousness in this planet. There are some that have studied for many, many years, but we're all learning. We're growing. We're expanding our consciousness. And quite frankly, I believe, I see it, signs everywhere, that the polarization that we've experienced in our country is actually, there's some goodness to it, because it's actually helping us become a lot more aware and doing some of our own research and starting to upshift our consciousness, so that we can start to understand maybe how to transcend all the duality and transcend some of these diseases and understand that we are at a much greater level. So thank you so much for being here, Dr. Brad Stewart. I appreciate it. And the book, again, we'll put it on the screen real quick, is Facing Death, Brad Stewart, MD. Hope you go get it. It's an awesome book. Take care. All right. Thank you so much. And I want to thank you all for joining me today on the Voices of Courage. This is a show that is for you, and I hope that you'll let all your friends and family know about it. Continue to see the unseeable, know the unknowable, and do the impossible. Till next time.
Luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.